When you arrive at work bleary-eyed, bruised, or still wearing a nasal strip, chances are you shared a bed the night before, and it's not nearly as romantic as you think. So why are you doing it then? Or do you? Recent studies suggest that more couples sleep apart for any number of reasons. Last year, The New Scientist reported that while women actually sleep better when they have a bedmate, the same is not true on the flip side of the pillow. An Austrian scientist found that men who share a bed with a partner are dumber the morning after compared to a night alone, not from the result of exertion, but from stress. Later in the program, we'll talk with a man whose moment may have arrived. In the middle of the pet food recalls, he champions home cooking for Fido. But first, if you're part of a couple, how do you sleep? Alone, with the kids wedged in, does the Sandman find you in Hollywood twins, separate bedrooms, or cuddled together in a four-poster? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, talk@npr.org, or join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're going to turn first to Dr. Helene Mselem, I hope I pronounced that correctly, I'm sorry about that, a sleep expert and director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders. She's with us here in Studio 3, and nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon.
What is the biggest sleep problem that affects couples?
I think the biggest sleep problem that affects couples is snoring.
Ah.
At least a third of the population, adult population, snores, so this is problematic for folks.
And it certainly keeps people awake. Is it true men snore more than women do?
Men snore more than women do, but women do snore, and like asking a woman her age, it's not something everyone likes to talk about.
Recordings are best presented as solid evidence if you're going to make your case.
Well, I always tell people to trust their bed partner. They're with you because they like you, and if they say you snore, you probably do.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that study that suggested that actually women sleep better if they have a bed partner, but not necessarily true for men?
I'm not sure. I'd like to see more data to support that. It's an interesting observation.
And do you ever recommend, maybe you ought to get separate beds?
Almost never. As a last resort, most of what I do as a sleep doctor is to see couples who want to get back in the same bedroom together.
Mm-hmm. Because intimacy is important for a lot of people.
Very much so.
And sleep is important for a lot of people, too. And what kind of problems can lack of sleep cause?
Lack of sleep has a global effect on our overall functioning. So we lose our ability to focus and concentrate and get our job done in a reasonable amount of time. It affects our ability to cognate, but very importantly, it affects our mood. So we're more likely irritable and grouchy when we don't have enough sleep. And we're not going to think of that great idea or the solution to the problem or do the great things that we hope we will each morning when we wake up.
Can you, almost on the basis of watching how people drive in the morning or watching them on the subway, they need a couple more hours.
Oh, I think that sleepiness is something we can all recognize in folks.
Yeah. And what is the, you said snoring is, when, in terms of couples, is a problem. Obviously, there are a lot of other problems that people have, sleep apnea for one.
Sleep apnea certainly is a major problem, and snoring may be a symptom of obstructive sleep apnea. So when snoring is very loud, and particularly with snorts or gasps, then we're concerned that there may be actual airflow problems, which can have a major long-term health risk and be dangerous in terms of heart disease or stroke. So we like to pluck those folks out and be sure that they get studied and treated.
And there's also people who flail around in bed and can strike their partner without even knowing it.
Yes. I mean, there are disorders like restless leg syndrome, which some people might experience during the day where you feel like your legs are creepy and crawly and can't sit still. And periodic limb movements can affect sleep at night. So we've had bed partners come in complaining that their partner's kicking them all night.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. If you're half of a couple, where do you sleep and why? Give us a call. Our guest again is Dr. Helene Mselem. And let's see if we can begin with Tim. Tim's with us from Boardman, Oregon. Tim, can you hear me? And let's see one more time. Tim, are you there? I guess Tim is not there. Let's go instead to Sean. Sean with us from Crestwood in Kentucky.
Yes, I'm an air traffic specialist in flight services, and I work solid graveyard shifts. And we sleep separately because when I'm awake, she's asleep, and vice versa. And plus, up until this year, she co-slept with our little girl. And then you add the fact I like a ice box of a bedroom, and she likes one that's in the 80s. I like to call it a sauna. And I cool the bedroom I sleep in overnight, and I sleep in a nice cool room during the day. And, of course, she has a little heater to keep her room warm. And it works out really nicely for us. Every once in a while, we sleep together. But for the most part, because on my days off, I keep a graveyard schedule so I can actually keep a body rhythm. We sleep separately, and it works out fine for us.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you've lost anything along the way, Sean?
A little bit, but it gives the advantage. She was able to co-sleep with our little girl till she was three, and I know I could never have slept in the bed with her because they both sort of spread across the bed, and we tried it once, and I ended up sleeping on this little 18-inch edge of the bed.
Also not conducive to a restful night's sleep. Dr. Mselem, he's describing a circumstance. There doesn't seem to be any other option.
It sounds like you've adapted well, and I think one of the most important things for couples, especially couples where one is a shift worker, to talk about it, to arrange a schedule so that you have a time for intimacy, so that you don't sacrifice things in your relationship, and work on making it work.
Oh, yeah, we've been scheduled that for ages. In fact, our little girl calls it daddy and mommy time.
We'll leave it right there, Sean. Thanks very much for the call.
Good evening.
Have a good rest. Let's see if we can talk now with this is line four. If I'd learn these numbers, the Arabic system, I'm going to have to get with it. Mona's with us. Mona's from Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Mona. Are you there?
This is Joe.
This is Joe. I apologize. Joe, go ahead.
I'm calling from Buffalo, New York. I was calling just to comment on the social aspect of it. I mean, I'm a much more solid sleeper than my wife is. I can wake up in the middle of the night. I always took care of the kids and went right back to sleep, where she's moving around, and once she's up, she's up. But, you know, for me to say that we should get separate beds would be devastating to her on an inter kind of personal relationship. But then also, like, there's a huge society kind of thing that, like, you know, oh, they're not sleeping together. Well, the problem probably isn't a sleep problem, and the problem's probably something else or something, you know. So there's really no easy way to do it and have it be acceptable to everybody.
It is, Doctor, a terrible thing sometimes to tell somebody, I'm going to go sleep in the other room.
Well, I think people see it as a social stigma. I think there are ways around that, but also if you're a good sound sleeper, it sounds like you've managed to adapt, and that's worked out well for both of you.
Well, yeah, I wish that was the case every night.
So do you feel that you get robbed of sleep that's part of what you have to put into the equation of being a couple?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it does affect you the next day. I mean, everything that you've described, I can certainly identify with. Everything from being cranky to just being much slower at work, you know?
Doctor?
Well, I think there's some things to look at in terms of what is waking you up and what is disturbing your sleep, and ways that you can minimize those factors. If you're with someone who gets up and can't sleep, then using night lights to read with, book lights to read with, trying to get quietly out of bed if that's necessary. But talking through what's causing it specifically can sometimes be helpful.
Yeah.
Good luck, Joe.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Melinda in Kansas City. My husband has been through sinus surgery, endured sleep apnea testing, which was positive, by the way, wore a CPAP machine for a while, and recently had a mouthpiece created to prevent his snoring as he couldn't stand the CPAP. Thanks to NPR, he heard about daily sinus cleansing via Sinew Cleanse, which is also helping with the snoring. Seems the poor man will do anything to keep me in the same bedroom. Frankly, I'm flattered, but I can't say I'd have gone through the same with this as my only reward. People will do a lot.
I think that's wonderful that he's done that much, and I think there are probably listeners out there who've been told that they have horrific snoring who aren't willing to put an effort out to try to work on the situation. And unfortunately, he's had a hard time getting a solution. Often it's a little easier than that.
And what is the CPAP machine?
A CPAP machine, CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure, and it's a small device that fits over your nose or has plugs that fit in your nose. And when you breathe with that, it produces a little positive pressure that holds the airway open, And it's partial airway closure that causes snoring and full airway closure that causes an apnea. So when you sleep with CPAP, it resolves both all the snoring and the apnea. The machines are quiet, and most bed partners don't care what you look like, but like it to be quiet in the room.
Is this obviously the much lower tech version of that is the nasal strip. Can that help people?
The nasal strips can help a little bit when there's nasal congestion that's causing the problem or very small nasal passages. There's a bulk of snoring that the nasal strips won't help, but they're easy enough to try.
Let's go to, this is Carol. Carol with us from Jacksonville, Florida.
I just wanted to share my family's sleeping arrangements. At night, we play what I call the musical beds game. Between me, my husband, our two little daughters, and two dogs, when we go to sleep at night, we never know where we're going to wake up. It seems like we move around all night. And it's worked out fine so far. I just feel now it's starting to get a toll on us. You know, I'm back working full-time and feel a little tired in the morning sometimes.
Would a regular arrangement be, if it can be arranged, a good idea, Doctor?
Well, I think working on what's waking the kids up at night, if there's a regular traffic between the kids' room and your room and they're coming in and getting you for things, reading some of the books that are out there on children's sleep and particularly young children's sleep and helping them console themselves to get back to sleep so that you can stay asleep is important. Sometimes shifting who takes the wake up call at night and who sleeps closest to the side with the door and takes care of that first is helpful. There's a book by Jody Mendel and one by Richard Ferber that are very helpful on children's sleep and helping kids stay asleep all night.
Have a good night's sleep, Carol.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take more of your calls and questions about where you sleep together, apart, why. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. We'll also be joined by Paul Rosenblatt, the author of Two in a Bed and a professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You may be snuggling and spooning in your bed, but this hour we're talking about what you're not doing, sleeping. And many have turned to drastic measures. Think Lucy and Ricky. You're invited to join the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can use your own name or maybe somebody else's if you need to. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guest is Dr. Helene M. Sullum, and she's director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders and a sleep expert. We're hoping to make contact with Paul Rosenblatt. We're having a little technical difficulty with the line, and we'll bring him into the conversation as soon as we can. In the meantime, let's see if we can get some more callers on the line. This is Angela. Angela with us from Tallahassee.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
My husband and I start out in the same bed, but I usually, as soon as I know that he's asleep, I get up and go find my own bed so that I can relax and stretch out.
And this just makes life easier for everybody?
It does for me. he's a big man, and he tends to take over the whole bed, so I find that I'm usually backed up against the wall. And that's not a very comfortable position to be in.
Yeah, there are territorial imperatives on the mattress, are there not, Doctor?
Oh, I think there definitely are, and that is a tough one to resolve when you're with a very restless sleeper or someone who just takes over all the space and you can't find a bed big enough.
And does he hog all the covers, too?
All of the covers, yes. So I have my little stash in the closet, and as soon as he's asleep, I just tip out, go to the other bedroom, and relax.
And obviously, this is not necessarily a solution when his mother or yours comes over for a visit.
Correct. Then I just suffer through it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for the call, Angela. We appreciate your time today.
Bye-bye.
We've now managed to make contact with Paul Rosenblatt, author of Two in a Bed, who teaches family social science at the University of Minnesota. His book is Two in a Bed, The Social System of Bed Sharing. And Paul Rosenblatt, nice to have you on the program today.
It's a relief to be here.
That's after all of that. Let me ask you, why we've been talking about some of the obvious reasons, snoring, a big one. Is that the biggest reason you think the couples sleep apart?
You know, for each couple, I think it's individual. And I interviewed couples who say they share a bed, but a lot of them sleep apart. And snoring is probably the most common thing, but sometimes they sleep apart because they're angry, or women going through menopause sometimes prefer to be somewhere where they don't have to worry about their tossing and turning and throwing covers off and pulling them on, disturbing their partner. And sometimes people sleep apart because one of them is sick or one of them is injured, or people want to read and the reading bothers the partner. It can be very, very individual, very different from one person to another.
Also, as we heard, people on different schedules, that could be an imperative.
Right. Although, you know, a lot of these things can be worked out. So some couples share a bed who have all these things, all these problems, whatever they are, snoring or, you know, big differences in preferred temperature or something. But other couples solve it by sleeping apart part of the night or all of the night some mm-hmm. of the time.
Is it injurious to a relationship necessarily if couples sleep apart?
Oh, no, I don't think so. In fact, if anything, it could be the other way. Lots of couples probably stay together longer and happier because they can sleep apart some or all of the time.
Yeah, sleep being the operative word there.
Well, yeah, sleep or just doing your own thing. I mean, if you want to stay up and read or watch television and that's driving your partner nuts, maybe that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it mean that there's less opportunity for spontaneous intimacy?
Yes. A couple of the couples I interviewed, the woman had decided she had had enough spontaneous intimacy and had moved to have great amounts of distance many nights. And those two couples, the husband was unhappy. He missed his spontaneous intimacy.
Mm-hmm. This can be an ongoing problem as well. And I wonder, Dr. Amsalem, what do you tell couples about this who, for one reason or another, end up sleeping apart?
Well, I think that one of the important things for me is what their agenda is when they come to see me. Often, coming to see a sleep doctor, it's, can you please get us back into the same bedroom? We want to be together.
Mm-hmm.
If the problem is solved by sleeping apart and they're comfortable with it, they just may not come in to discuss it.
Hmm. Let's see if we can get some more callers in on the conversation. And let's go now to Patrick. Patrick with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Since I was a wee lad, I've always held my breath while I was sleeping, and I would hold it for quite a long time and then just let it out very slowly in kind of a squeaking noise. And when I started dating my girlfriend, I was quite concerned, but it turns out she snores, so I was very pleased that she wouldn't be bothered by mine. As far as sleeping at night, the only thing that bothers me is she likes to chase me around and snuggle up against me, and I prefer to have a little space.
Mm-hmm. But this is not driving you to different beds.
No, but I told her, if, you know, when we move in together, that I am definitely going to bring my own bed and have my own room, so that when she starts chasing me around after she's asleep, I'm going to go sleep in my own bed.
Hmm. I wonder, Paul Rosenblatt, does it, at least in Patrick's case, there seems to be the sort of a mutually assured destruction of sleep noises. Does it work out better if both people snore rather than just one?
You know, I don't want to prejudge what's going to happen to Patrick and his friend, but I think for some couples, having either partner make noise is a problem for the other. And the fact that we're both making noise wouldn't make a difference. But this part about her being sort of pursuing him around the bed, that's a pretty common thing for those of us who live in Minnesota. We have these long, cold winters that last 7 months or something like that. And lots of couples, part of their chemistry is she's cold and is attracted to his warmth, and he likes snuggling, at least at first. But then down the road, when she's heat-seeking and he's... he wants to not be shocked by the cold. Mm-hmm. That could be a problem. But couples negotiate how she can be heat-seeking. You know, they might negotiate that he'll warm up her side of the bed first when he goes to bed, so she'll stay there. Or they might negotiate that she try to keep the contact at her feet and ankle level rather than all over his body.
And Dr. Amsalem, I was wondering about Patrick's description of holding his breath and releasing it slowly. Is that common?
You know, that is not a common breathing pattern at night, and when he does have a constant observer in the same room with him, if she is observing you to stop snoring, stop breathing, Patrick, it may be worth looking at that. One of the advantages of one person snoring and the other not is that you do have an observer who can help you get help when you need it.
Usually cranky enough to take notes, too.
Sometimes.
Patrick, good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. I'm wondering about the issue of the bed itself. Paul Rosenblatt, can some problems be solved if you just get a queen size and a good mattress?
Couples I've interviewed say, yes, having more space, even a few more inches, can help. And it's partly the distance and partly that the bigger beds often transmit less movement of one person. Also, some couples get these dual mattresses that, you know, inflate to different pressures, and sometimes that solves some problems.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that are recommendations ever that simple, Doctor?
Sometimes it is. The ability to set the pressure on the tension on a mattress does help people who have different sleeping preferences for the comfort mm-hmm. level. Sometimes you can get a king frame with two separate twin mattresses that doesn't transmit as much movement if someone kicks at night. And those things are kind of easy solutions to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Tracy in Portland, Oregon. I'm always amazed by how few people think to use earplugs to help with a snoring spouse. I've been using them since I married my husband. It's made a world of difference. This may not work for those with young children, but for us, no children, it works great. This has cut down the instances of one of us ending up on the couch. The other thing that's helped greatly is a king-sized bed. There you go. We attempted to sleep in a queen for a while. We just didn't like being right at each other's backs. We needed our space. So there are two practical solutions. Doc?
The earplugs are fine if you can sleep with them. Some people feel that there's so little noise with the earplugs that they're uncomfortable. The other thing is, I think it's okay to drown out the snoring as long as it's been checked out and we're sure that there isn't underlying sleep apnea.
Let's get another caller on. This is Mark. Mark with us from San Antonio. Mark, you there? I seem to be having some problems with the phones today. Let's go to instead to Jody. Jody with us from Concord, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I went on vacation with a friend of mine, and she woke up in the other room in the middle of the night and said she thought there was someone in the house, because I carry on such conversations in my sleep that it's unbelievable. I even have done tears in my sleep. And you can do things for snoring, but what can you do for talking in your sleep?
Wait a minute. Literally, rah-rah, sis, boom, bah, cheers?
Yes. Yes.
let's turn to you first of all, Doctor, and tell him.
As with most sleep things, we want to understand why. If you've been a sleep talker since you were a child, that may be a totally benign phenomenon. There are some medications that will suppress it, but it's always a trade-off to have to take a medication for that. Some people take medication when they're going to be sharing space with someone and not use it when they're by themselves. There are also some other disorders that can appear in adulthood, so the new onset of sleep talking behaviors could be a sign of a REM sleep behavioral disorder. We see this sometimes in people on antidepressant medications, and some medications can cause it. So taking a good look at the situation with your doc together to sort it out is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Paul Rosenblatt, does this come up in your research?
Sure. A number of couples I interviewed talked about somebody talking in their sleep, and the first time you have experience it can be really startling. You know, the woman from California said she was traveling with a friend, and maybe it was the mm-hmm. first time the friend heard her talking. But couples work it out. You know, the partner learns to say, well, that's not for me. I don't have to respond. And also, among the couples I interviewed, some said it disappeared over the course of their relationship. It was more their when they were newly together, when they were young, than it was later on.
Hmm. Jody, thanks very much. By the way, do you do voices? I mean, do you have conversations with yourself?
Yes, I talk to my own self and at length, but that actually was the first person that's ever been around when I was asleep, so I don't know what else goes on.
Okay. Might we set up a video camera some night and see what does go on?
Wouldn't that be fun?
That'd be interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Here's an email from Barbara in Kansas City. After 40 years in 3 different relationships, I finally found a wonderful bed partner. She's in hers. I'm in mine. She likes a waterbed. I like a hard mattress. She likes to stay up late. I like to get to bed early. She likes to have the TV on when she falls asleep. I like it quiet and dark. She's often restless and turns on the light to read at 4 a.m. I'm a light sleeper. For us, trying to actually sleep together is just misery. For both of us, we love the freedom and restful bliss of separate bedrooms. And in this case, you know, Paul Rosenblatt, this seems entirely fine.
Yeah, you know, every couple differs in many, many ways. And the early part of the relationship deals with dealing with those differences about sharing a bed and differences about a lot of other things. And then as you work out the differences about sharing a bed, you decide you can tolerate some other things. But also as people get older, as the relationship goes on, new problems arise. You know, your bodies change, your work situation changes, your family situation changes. And so there are always new problems to deal with. It's part of the excitement of sharing a bed.
Here's another email. This from Peter in Redwood City. It may sound strange, but because of my snoring, we sleep with our heads at opposite ends of the bed. Dr. Amsellem, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, that is a solution sometimes for people. Just the distance to the other end of the bed is enough to dull down the noise so it's not troubling to the bed partner. Some people just feel like it's weird and don't like to do it when we make that suggestion, but it works for some folks.
What about that strange mid-20th century invention, the Hollywood twin bed, a result of the Hayes office's puritanical streak? Didn't want actors and actresses getting into the same bed together. Thereby, we end up with all these people on screen and on television with Hollywood twin beds, but you're a few feet apart.
Yeah, we don't see that much of that these days. I think when people want to leave the room, they want the comforts of their own total privacy in terms of light, noise, and all of those things. So I see very few people in the same room on separate twin beds.
Hayes' office made some mistakes on some other issues, too. Anyway, we're talking with Paul Rosenblatt, the author of Two in a Bed, and Dr. Helene Amsellem, a sleep expert and director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And on the air with us now is Jim. Jim calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I noticed that one of the doctors, I don't know which one it was, just barely touched on a disorder called REM behavior disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something which I've suffered from for about the last 10 or 15 years. And it can be very dangerous. And, of course, it frightens my wife a lot. It's where the little electrical switch in your head that's supposed to turn off your muscles when you sleep so that you don't act out your dreams malfunctions. And so that's what I do. I act out my dreams, and sometimes they can be a little violent, and we've had some problems with that.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off, Jim.
Okay. The peculiar thing is that most of the doctors are, in fact, all of the doctors that I've ever mentioned it to, I found it myself by accident on the Internet. None of the doctors that I've mentioned it to have ever heard of it. Of course, I quickly set them straight if I can, and they are always interested and always follow up on it. And I'm wondering what the two good doctors here have to say about that.
Well, Dr. Amsellem, I think this was you who mentioned this.
The REM sleep behavioral disorder is a troubling disorder. It's when we do act on the content of our dream, and we should be paralyzed when we dream because we dream strange, bizarre things, sometimes frightening.
Right.
And you can act out and punch somebody in your dream, and that may turn out to be your bed partner or your pillow or the door. People have gotten out and run out of the bedroom and tripped over things and injured themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This is a condition that you should see a doctor about and see a sleep specialist, and there are treatments to help the condition and to suppress the activity at night.
He can't have an awful lot of confidence in doctors to whom he has to explain the condition.
Yeah, it is an unusual condition. Because we see it as a side effect of some antidepressants, we are actually seeing more of it now than we did 10 years ago.
Yes, I am on antidepressants. I am. That's true. One of the things that I discovered that is supposed to help is a medication called clonazepam, which is a derivative of something else which escapes me.
Mm-hmm.
And melatonin is another thing that I heard that helps, and so I've been taking both of those. But
I'm not going to ask the doctor to diagnose you on the radio, but are these standard treatments for this kind of condition?
Yes, particularly the first is a standard treatment for the condition. Dosage adjustment might be required, as with any medication that you take.
Mm-hmm.
Jim?
Yes?
I want to give some other people a shot.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
And good luck with it.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Bridget in St. Louis. I'm riveted by this topic. My husband gets extreme night sweats so bad the sheets must be changed, which constantly interrupts our sleep. As a result, I secretly wish we could just give ourselves permission to sleep separately because the sleeplessness often results in bad moods the next day. Can the guest speaker offer any thoughts on what could cause night sweats and what we could do peacefully to coexist in the same bed? We may have to take both of these separately, but on the night sweats, Dr. Amsellem?
Night sweats, long list of things, sleep apnea. apnea is right up at the top of the list of things that can cause night sweats. Blood sugar problems can cause night sweats. Other metabolic problems like thyroid disease. Just eating dinner very late at night can cause sweating at night sometimes and disturb nighttime sleep.
And quickly, Paul Rosenblatt, any thoughts on peaceful coexistence on this issue?
A lot of the couples I've interviewed, a partner who really would like to be apart starts wandering apart, you know, gets up during the night or delays getting to bed. And so they end up sleeping apart part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they find that works, it becomes easier to sleep apart more.
More on this after the break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're continuing our conversation on where you sleep with if you're part of a couple and why. Our guests are Paul Rosenblatt, author of Two in a Bed. He's a professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota. Also with us is Dr. Helene M. Selim, author of Snooze or Lose and a sleep expert director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders. She's with us here in Studio 3A in Washington. And let's see if we can get Jay on the line. Jay's calling us from St. Louis.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually had a question. Your conversation so far has seemed to focus mostly on mixed-gender couples, and I'm actually just wondering whether the doctors have observed any noticeable differences in way same-gender couples interact. I know my former partner and I were both like little furnaces in bed, and it was virtually impossible to get a decent night's sleep sharing the same bed.
Paul Rosenblatt, does this come up?
I've interviewed lesbian couples. I haven't interviewed gay couples, but the lesbian couples I interviewed were so different from each other, it was really hard to generalize. But it makes sense to me that two guys sleeping in a bed would be like furnaces. I mean, in the heterosexual couples, especially when they're younger, it's the guy who's generally the heat generator and the woman who's generally the heat seeker.
And Dr. Msalem?
We certainly have many gay couples in our practice who are often seeking help so they can sleep together. So it's not a universal rule. And certainly one male snoring can disturb another male just as much as disturbing a female.
Jake?
Well, thank you. I was just curious if anything noticeable had come up in your studies that was remarkable in particular, but it doesn't sound like it.
Okay, Jay. Thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Here's an email I'm not sure either of you can answer. This is from Hopi in Thatcher, Arizona. Is it true that Japanese culture used to or still does encourage each spouse to have their own bedroom with a third bedroom, which is shared? Paul Rosenblatt?
You know, I have one Japanese couple who are friends, and what I know is the kids show up in the bed and the couple sleeps together, but I don't know if they're an odd couple or a normal couple.
Go ahead, doctor.
I don't know anything about that Japanese example, but when I read the reports from the real estate folks that they're building more houses with separate master bedrooms, I wondered if they were going to build an intimacy room as well.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get Elise on the line. Elise in Nashville, Tennessee.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I only snore when we have cold or allergies. He's got a bit of a restless thing where his arm goes up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's holding his forehead, and his elbow sometimes smacks me or I'm worried about it. But the big issue is that I get to be a lighter sleeper as it gets toward morning, 4 or 5 in the morning. And once I start waking up, pushing his arm down, restless, turning because he's snoring and waking me up, then we start cycling back and forth, waking each other up. And I'd really like to know if there's any way, once I start getting lighter in my sleep, to not get lighter in my sleep so that I can sleep through that early morning snoring. I just can't sleep through it.
Dr. Msalem?
Early morning awakenings where one gets wakeful between 2 and 5 in the morning are difficult to treat, but they are manageable. We don't have many drugs on the market in terms of managing sleep when there are problems in the middle portion of the sleep period, but there are many under study, and there are a few compounds that are FDA approved. Some of the low doses of antidepressant medications will improve sleep continuity, as well as some of the anticonvulsant medications. It seems that it's very hard to manage that behaviorally. Sometimes a good daily exercise routine will improve the quality of nighttime sleep, so that's certainly worth trying as well.
Go ahead, Paul.
Sorry. I interviewed couples where that was an issue, and some women, and it's much more likely the woman who's the light sleeper among the couples I've interviewed, light sleeper later in the night, and some of those couples, the woman gets up and goes somewhere else, to lie down, and she might find it easier to sleep because then she's not tense and nervous about waking up her partner.
Yeah, we do separate, and I really appreciate how much you're just telling people, stop trying to fit a norm that a couple should never sleep apart, because I think getting that message through to people is probably the most important thing y'all can do for folks, just to feel okay about whatever decisions you make.
Great.
Thank you.
And before we leave the subject, I wanted to ask you both, obviously we've seen an explosion in the new kinds and availability of various sleep aids, medicines of various types, and do these problems contribute to people ending up taking a pill every night, Dr. M. Salem?
Well, we don't think it should. Taking a medication for sleep on a nightly basis, particularly initiating sleep, is not a good solution. Most of the time, changing behaviors is the better long-term way to address those problems.
But does it do people say, he's going to snore, I better go and get an Ambien?
Well, people do say that. I think that a good doc is going to try to deal with the other side snoring rather than drugging the partner who can't sleep through it.
All right. Well, I wish you all a good night's sleep. Thank you both, our guests. Paul Rosenblatt, author of Two in a Bed, professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota, joining us today from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Helene M. Salem, author of Snooze or Lose and director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders, who is with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And when we come back, we'll be talking about home-cooked pet food.